Thanks, Eliane. All right. So one of the things that we were charged with or we need to do at this point is to make sure that we not only think but do. Okay? So moving from think to do, could I ask that you use your little pads there and write down a couple of ideas for this? Well, we're going to come up with three, but if you can only think of one of two, we'll put these together. But what are the top three strategic, business, and societal challenges and opportunities that we want to bring to the think tank? Okay, what are the three strategic and business, the three strategic business and societal challenges and opportunities to bring to the think tank? And these relate to priorities for business, social, and health innovation and policy change, you know, in this area.
So reflecting on the discussions we had in panel one, panel two, panel three, panel four, and your own impressions, what do you think are these three opportunities, both from the business point of view, from the societal point of view, that you think are important? Right? And challenges and opportunities, so both constraints and advantages.
Jot some down and then we'll share them.
Thank you.
right. Who wants to start?
I'll start.
Okay, Mary.
These are real flip chart. You don't have PowerPoint anymore.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So I'll just mention some of these things.
Right, I've got three. Explore the potential of adopting or adapting the Grammon approach in several communities in Canada, both large centers and smaller centers.
Sorry to be academic and pedantic. What do you mean by explore the potential?
How you would do it. Yeah, because I think it has to be adopted to Canadian realities and partners. Everyone? I can give this to you. Second is build capacity among the business community about social entrepreneurship and how they may be partners in its development and better understand the linkages to health and potential healthcare costs. And thirdly, advocate for these issues to be on the agenda and discussed at the G20 and G8 meetings to be held in Ontario in 2010, and how countries can advance and support financial empowerment of poor and vulnerable populations and how that is linked to national prosperity as well as to health.
Technology is failing us. So I advocate to advance the G8, G20. So I guess this is on the Nick Dragger's point about use these events to.
Yeah, but the idea is to link it.
To link
financial empowerment of vulnerable populations to national prosperity, mm-hmm. as well as to the health of populations. You've got to provide these linkages.
Yep. I'd like to mention just one question, actually, which is regarding partnerships. How can partnerships be built involving the private sector, state, and universities, right, in order to foster the not only the microfinance market, but, involving the questions we've discussed today, which addresses education, health. That's the main question I'd like to ask.
How can partnerships? Again, how can partnerships?
How can partnerships be built?
Oh, okay.
Considering the private sector, universities, and the state.
Built, not viewed.
Built.
Well, I have three, right? Is that what we were asked for? I've written them out, so you don't have to write them down, and you'll forgive me, I'm an academic, so I'm calling for more research. One, should the research results show, I label microfinance creates healthy jobs. If you've got 4 seconds with a politician, that's what you can say. Assemble the evidence to show that microfinance, a la Grameen, Desjardins, and Santander, create net new jobs, or at least don't do any harm to them, a la India, and that these kind of jobs create health. And ideally, I have to say, as an environmentalist, climate change control, but that's a bonus point. 2, governments can help microfinance in cost-free ways. So identify what public policy changes are most needed now to scale up job-creating and health-creating microfinance. We're very busy reforming banking regulations, fussing about how many banks a country should have. And since the Americans are having fewer than they used to, why not make it easier to create more, right, at the on the streets, as it were, Main Street, Side Street, USA. Three, design smart exit strategies to support microfinance. I don't know if you have any monetary policy economists here. Identify how monetary policy exit strategies and their impact on policy interest rates and thus market interest rates will affect how microfinance works.
As an academic, it's really just in his brain. I can always ask him if he's going to be there.
This is my last article.
I'm sorry, I'm really some parts of this.
We don't have conversions on the top three, though.
So, yeah, I have 3 points.
All right.
Of course, clear is... I keep on the flag of social business. So to start a social business in Canada with a franchise power. So I guess this was a solution what I saw today, at least for the Canadians, that can have an enormous impact. Secondly, it's more about the meeting because I'm very impressed what an enormous capacity comes together. But now since 14 years I set up meetings and just to remind on the meeting as himself, I missed the youths in the meeting today. I missed the young brains, the challengers, the students, at least to have 5 students or 6 students in the room who challenge us from time to time. And secondly is I missed the format of using modern tools like fishbowls, like other stuff, to using the intelligence who comes together in the best way, because this enormous capacity who sits what you bring together is really incredible. And there's a lot of business tools who do top managers, where we can learn from the top managers, and I'm open to share it. So change a little bit the format and grow in this beautiful meeting.
Study the relationship between socially responsible MFIs and health outcomes.
I think the point.
Somebody mentioned that to you?
You're
okay.
Two of our candidates.
All right. Now, this is the this is a real.
It must be right. We want
okay.
Action.
All right. Can social business, in cooperation with private sector, deliver solutions to tackle endemic diseases?
Deliver solutions
to endemic diseases.
If I don't think that my recommendation is for Canada, I'm trying to visualize, I'm not sure, but I'll try it for other parts of the world for sure. And I missed part of the meetings before, so tell me if it was already explored. But besides microcredit per se, one extraordinary experience in India, in the state of Gujarat, based in the state of Gujarat, that has more than 1 million women members, is called the Self-Employed Women's Association. And it's based in Ahmedabad, and it's both a credit, it's a women's movement of the poorest of the poor. It's an economic, socio-economic enterprise, and it's the street vendors, the rag pickers, the poorest of the poor, and it has both empowered them, but it has lifted their income. And it borrows to the union movement, although they have no employers in the concept, to Gandhi and to the credit, the co-op movement. And I just discovered, to my amazement, that they sent some of their coordinators to train at St. FX, at the Cody Institute here in Nova Scotia, which is the father of the co-op movement in Canada. So that is really, we saw them during the commission in action, and their coordinator was a member of the commission, Mihai Chatterjee. It is exceptional. I was thinking, I don't know if it can apply in Canada. I was thinking Aboriginal, First Nations. No, we have, it's too local. The community is too local in Canada, and the country is too vast and too empty somehow. So I just don't know if it applies here, but I'm sure it applies elsewhere.
So you mean some type of other empowerment,
yes,
institutions?
And money-making, because by organizing, by getting rid of the middlemen, by organizing the women between them, by organizing them, yeah, suddenly they're no longer miserable. They're groups, and they have command stone on their bargaining power, basically. Mm-hmm. They're put in the power. In French, we say apport de force, in the power relationship.
So it's based on the cooperative business?
It's co-op plus.
Okay.
I would say. I think it's worth exploring exactly how they did it and are still doing it and growing.
Okay. Co-op plus. And here to do what? Can we use these things to pursue health or to pursue?
Well, it's to pursue indirectly health, but it's to pursue empowerment and income.
Innovative
which
institutions.
Leads,
other innovative
institutions.
Yes.
Okay, good.
I want to elaborate a little more on the network part, because it has, like, it's on the first page with universities and putting research and business together. It has been bothering me that we're on the social business side. I'm working with Hans to founding social businesses. And what is very appealing for us is that we are a very small group, we are effective, we can act much more flexible than a UN or anyone tackling the same problems can do. So we don't have the time to do all the research that is needed to make our businesses most efficient. So we need the access to studies showing us where can we have the best impact. And it's not the studies which is 150 pages and we can understand, but it has to be, we have to focus on studies that actually are not just accessible to us, but also meaningful to us from a business perspective.
On the Indian project I referred to, the initials by which its name is SEWA.
Seva.
Okay. Three main topics I would suggest, or sorry, three main topics I would suggest or try to explore. First one being the adaptation of the Grameen model in the American context, the North American context, especially differentiating what could be applied in the urban and the rural area, in the First Nations area, which may be the best place where these types of models could apply, in communities that are very specific with very intense problems and a level of functioning that resembles
rejected, like the painting of the quarter.
or bad. So this is something that can be done very early in the process of purchases. Maybe we could have asked business school to do this kind of research, no cost in terms of
business schools are cheap. Pro bono, not cheap labor.
No, there are student groups who are willing to take on these projects. We do them for through CESO. Yeah. We do these.
So Mike is dead again?
Mike did.
But I have this one. I could change it.
Second point?
Thank you. Yeah, the second point would be to promoting to the business sector in this community, promoting the gain that they could get by investing in social issues.
It's getting heavier.
So I think there's some social marketing to do with the business community to show them how important it is for them to invest in the social issue intervention. One example I have in mind is something that is supported by Chagnon Foundation, but many, many other people in the community, the Quebec community, support also. It's the school perseverance. In Quebec, we have tremendous problems with children that do not complete their school dropouts, and it's almost 30% of the young people, male especially, that do not complete their schooling, and it has tremendous impact for the industries and the whole community and the whole business community. There's huge job shortage in many, many sectors, mostly because people don't complete their schooling. This is one small aspect that has an impact for business communities, and this should be promoted. They should be aware of these issues.
And have you started doing on that? Because Jacques Ménard is an advisor.
Jacques Ménard is an advisor.
So what is it you have started doing?
We've created an OS in English, ONG, that's okay. It. Non-profitable
NGO.
With the government of Quebec to support the 17 regions of Quebec to intervene, to make programs adapted to the local communities to make them take charge of the problem with very specific and very local characteristics of their market. So this is happening right now, and there are many others interventions, but it's a constant that we're working with the business community in all these contexts. So there's some social marketing to do there, and the third one. Well, it has to do with something that I do not see here, is the presence of the business community. If I can ask this small survey, how many people are from the business community here? Two people. Two and a half or three?
Daniel, you are from the business community.
Yes, from the Grameen, yeah. It's a business indeed. But I think there's an advocacy problem somewhere in the implication of business community in this whole context of social intervention. They're quite sidelined. I don't know why or how it could be made more central for them, but I think, again, maybe with some pro bono stuff or investment with universities or with other types of organization, we could have more implication of the business communities. In terms of philanthropy, first, and I speak for myself since I'm from the Chagnon Foundation, Mr. Chagnon being a very, very successful businessman who decided at the end to give back to the community almost all everything he had. I don't ask this for all the business in the world, but there's, again, a necessity for the business to be to be aware of the advantages to invest in the social issues.
Do you have that right, or are they just your notes? He got them up enough. He got them up enough.
This is not helping. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Daniel was linking the Wall Street with the Main Street.
In fact, I must agree that microfinance was definitively new for me. I was not really concerned about before. What I like in the microfinance, it's the ethical aspect. In fact, my understanding of the credit, microcredit, is to help poor people to take this destiny in hands and to obtain financial independence. This is very ethical. The point I would like to share with you is I think that we have to teach the importance of ethics in business. It must be taught in business school. This is the place, not elsewhere, in business school. And I think that this is the role of the university to take care about the sense of ethics, and because there is a lot to do about. And to have this sense of ethics, not just because we are actually in a crisis, but on a permanent, long term, for the long run. Yeah. Because this is one of the future, it's basic for the society.
I'm sorry, but I'm from the business school. And I believe strongly that you can teach ethics not in the business school, but by the time they come to business school, they're 20-year-olds and their values are basically formed. I think ethics should start at home.
Absolutely.
By the parents. And if the parents fail to do the job, then no amount of professorial teaching is going to make them ethical. It's a very important issue. I agree with you. Has to start at home.
And continue in business
and
school.
And continue in the business school. That's fine. Reinforced. Yes, that's fine.
Yeah, but I think there is an opportunity because, you know, even the mafia have an ethic. Each, you know.
It's a different ethic.
Yeah, and so, and we have to. But every group have an ethic, and what we have to see is what's our business ethic. And this has to be taught in the business school. The basic ethics comes from home,
yeah.
Always. Awesome. It comes. But the business ethic, a global business ethic, this is what we have to develop together at the business school around the world.
Well, I'd like to make some offers. You can refuse, but I'm going to do that now. All right, so anyone else wants to...
anyone on this side?
Summarize. Well, actually, don't worry, we're academics. We can summarize.
Maybe it's my ignorance or the recent development of interest in microcredit. I'm not sure whether microcredits and microfinancing
at national level reflects government's inability or failure to reach the poor. Or if we discuss it from a developed country perspective, then you're trying to reach the last 10% of your population. But in countries where more than 50% are below the poverty line, how does microfinancing how do we harmonize microfinancing with national development plans of the government? Because governments are elected basically for social upliftment. And if this mandate is given to business, and if this mandate is given in some other hands, then what do the elected representatives of the government talk about? So while there is business, while there is entrepreneurship, what does government do? Because we need to, first of all, convince, as has been raised, the financial stability or security and health outcomes, and need to demonstrate that link, how weak or strong it is. And what sustainable change is microfinancing trying to bring in the society? And from a developing country's perspective.
So I'm not sure I understand the point in terms of that. There were many ideas in there. So you said, what is the role of government?
How do you harmonize national development plans and microcredit initiatives in developing countries? Because governments, when they get elected, when governments are formed, government lays, develop policies, they start with the poor. And they target the poor first. In India, the National Rural Health Mission is today the flagship program on health. It did not start with National Urban Health. It started with the rural, where 70% of the population still resides. The example of Seva Gram, which you are giving, it is in the poor regions, and the government of Gujarat has taken it on itself as a political mileage out of it. Gujarat is an example of a state where Gandhi was born, and empowerment has always been the hallmark of that state. And politicians arising from that state will always take leadership in that. So a small initiative gets taken over by political circles very easily, and then it is twisted, and there have been many failures for each success, and those also should be looked into.
That's a very good point.
That's a good point. Yeah, look at failures as well as success.
Research agenda for the research community, so to engage very specifically with the practitioners and the policymakers in attendance about what information they need directly from the research community in order to scale up proven programs.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. Do we know enough about, we have a lot of small successes, what makes some small successes enables them to scale up and others simply remain small?
Since we are talking about strategic business and societal opportunity, I missed part of the discussion. As the strategic opportunity since the next G8 and G20 is in Canada next year, that the proposition is really that we feed in some way the outcome. We have four of the social determinants where we are full of bright, not only bright academicians, but bright practitioners. I think one of the things that we want to bring to the think tank is how to package what will be discussed here in terms of way forward and making it a think and do tank, and get all of us to work on placing this on the G8 and G20 agenda. So for me, that is a real concrete strategic opportunity that we would not want to miss.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Lorette. All right. That might be a good place to wrap it up.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, I don't know if I have any. I don't know if there's anything different. I do endorse the G8 proposal. I think that's something that's really terrific. And I think if they had a cause connected to the G8, for example, eliminating poverty or eliminating hunger and picking a year. I mean, there's a goal of doing something by 20.
Very urgent. I mean, their agenda and the Sherpas are at work since quite some time.
Right. So give them a proposal. Yeah, you know how to write proposals and do studies and just give them the information so they can just say yay. As a businessman and a practitioner, I hear a lot of things about studies, and my recommendation is we should not do a study and we should just do a program. So that was my recommendation, and it could we just do it? It does work. And as we attended the Clinton Global Initiative not too long ago, at each one of those meetings, there is some initiative that comes out of those meetings, and then you measure the results of that initiative a year later. And what I propose is that I will commit Grameen America's time and our expertise to opening up a Grameen branch in Canada. We will help you form an advisory board, and anyone who's here who lives in Canada can be on that board, and we will come to regular meetings with you, and we will go to foundations and the government and to corporate sponsors, and we will raise the initial, and we will take on the responsibility of doing the presentations to raise the initial $2 million, which is not very much money, to get started, and then the following year and the year after more money will come. So we will do that. You have my commitment.
Thank you very much.
I think the first project.
Here you go.
First
project. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So just quickly over the points. So I explored potentials of Grameen Bank in Canada. That came back a few times. So then, of course, the advisory board will make sure to differentiate according to urban, rural, and some of the conditions so that it's actually adapted to the local needs. Build capacity in terms of collaborations between university practitioners and business people. The advocate to advance G8, G20 in terms of that. Better partnerships between state businesses and universities, this is coming back to that. More research. Identify policies for scaling up in terms of that, and design a smart exit strategy, some credit. If you go into this, it's start social businesses in Canada with franchise power is something presented by there's in Montreal, in fact, if you think of the of coffee, there's Café Saint-Tropole, who's actually is a social business, and they're starting to franchise that because you can buy coffee from Café Saint-Tropole and actually in Ottawa. So they're starting that. Can social businesses deliver solutions to endemic diseases was one point. Can we use other empowerment institutions besides microcredit? Promoting businesses to show how important social interaction is for them. So I think there's a lot of part of the do of this think tank is not only doing Grameen Bank in Canada, but I think it's also to reach out to the business community and discuss that further so that they more and more and even teach them some ethics. But of course, we think ethics should go before university level.
Business ethics, not just ethics.
All right.
The business.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so ethics and business schools.
Business
ethics. So. Well, I don't know what they teach in business schools. If they teach ethics, presumably it should be business ethics. If they don't teach business ethics in business schools, providing they teach ethics. But anyway, so that's, why not? Right. What's the role of government in harmonizing overall development plans and microcredit initiatives? That
was the point here. That is, that there are other initiatives to alleviate poverty besides microcredit, and one has to understand that. All right, and the research community must engage with practitioners, business communities, and in fact, here is that I think it's a call for practitioners and businesses and research community people to talk to each other, because I'm a researcher, so I can research all the way. But a lot of my researchers, even though it's been published in great papers and everything else, no one gives a damn, all right, because it's just not applicable. All right, so I think there's a call also for the government as well as practitioners and business community to talk to us and say, what do they need, so that there's a knowledge transfer so we can help. What could we do to do some value added? Because otherwise, of course, you get research grants and tenure and all of this on these papers, but it'd be nice to be helpful in communities at some point, right? So, isn't it? And the last one is just do it. That is what we talked about here, and we had an example of that. So these are our top three.
Can I just add one thing? Because we talked a lot here about business and the connection between business and health, et cetera. I mean, the whole event is about. But in Canada, there is one of the sponsors of this event, the Conference Board of Canada, has a round table, which some people that are here are on, which is specifically looking at the social determinants of health and health inequalities. So I think there's an opportunity to bring this idea to their table, because they're doing research about certain initiatives in Canada that the business community can get involved in, such as public-private partnerships around housing, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that there's an on-the-ground opportunity there.
So if I put it here, Conference Board of Canada
Roundtable on Social Economic Determinants of Health. There's another growing group that is bringing civil society organizations together to look at health and social issues collectively across sectors. And they may be, and because they reach, they will have, when they form more fully, they'll have a reach into communities across different sectors. They could also be a vehicle for moving ideas out.
So we know next time around, these people have to come. Any other ideas? So there are at least three in there where there's some consensus, I think, isn't it?
You'll do the cluster analysis.
So we'll do the cluster analysis, run the regressions, and present this on Thursday, and we'll be discussing this further. And I was also hope that those of you who will be presenting part of the credit and financial empowerment part of the workshop on Thursday might use some of these ideas to generate more, even more discussions with the rest of the audience on Thursday. Well, in that case, thank you very much. It was great.